Hope you enjoyed your tea, right? We're in the final straight. We have one more presentation and then a panel session, question and answer session. So, for any of you that read blogs, particularly if you read blogs in the area of e-learning, I'm sure you'll know our next speaker, Stephen Downs from the National Research Council in Canada. I want to say thank you very much to Stephen for coming over and speaking to us today. Stephen, as I say, a world-renowned blogger, but also reasonably outspoken, I think it's fair to say, about the state of Second Life and 3D virtual world. So I'm really looking forward to what he has to say. Stephen.
Well, hi everyone. I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Labatt Pawpaw. I have 13 Linden dollars. I earned it, earned them in a casino, sitting in a chair. I don't have a home, much less an island. I hang out at a place called The Shelter. It really exists. I hang out at the bar. Every once in a while, click on the lime jelly. I got my clothing through the Goodwill. And I'm beginning to worry that my second life is resembling my first life. So you'll forgive me if I come to this talk with a bit of, shall we say, an attitude. I'm being cast, not completely unwillingly, but into the role of the techno-skeptic. And it's a role I'm not really familiar with, I'm not really comfortable with, because, you know, those of you who know me, who've read OL Daily, and that know that, you know, I've been playing with these toys for a long time. I really like this technology, and I'm obviously very much into it. So for me to be a techno-skeptic is kind of an odd position, but I'll play that role because I think there are things that need to be said. And I'll focus in this talk mostly on Second Life. But I think that the comments that I have to make could be applied to virtual reality generally, and should raise some issues and some questions in your mind about how we approach this whole topic. I mean, Second Life has been, in the last little while, a phenomenon, hasn't it? We've been reading all over all the news about it. We've been reading about how impressive it has become, how many million residents there are. We can see, you know, this well into the power curve. And we've been hearing, especially, that Second Life is not just an online phenomenon, but an economic phenomenon. Jim Prubrick, even from Linden Labs, when he was up here talking earlier this morning, he was talking not just about the number of people who are in Second Life and the things that they do in Second Life, but many of the points that he had to make had to do with the economics of Second Life, how people were earning a living in Second Life. Did you catch that? And the amount of money being transacted through Second Life. And that's a very interesting phenomenon. Yesterday, Gartner came out with a report that said 80% of active internet users will have a quote-unquote second life by 2011. And we have to ask, is that a reasonable statement to make? My own perspective is that, you know, even given the power curves, that it's not. Of course, Gartner may have an interest in saying things like that, but I wouldn't want to... There have been a lot of education initiatives, and we've seen a bunch of them here so far today. Just touch on a few of them. The SCOM, which is not school, not home. It's another virtual place, and of course that other virtual place is, to a large degree, Second Life. Teen library in Second Life, and that brings in the whole phenomenon of teen Second Life, which I won't get into a whole lot. It's interesting how it's being portrayed. And what struck me when looking at that page, look at, I don't know if the writing is big enough there, I sort of wanted it to be sort of unobtrusive. Now, of course, I'm highlighting it. It just shows how your plans for presentations change on the fly. You know, through special permission from Linden Labs, the creators of Second Life, a select group of librarians and other adult educators have been given access. That just seems like odd language to be using in the context of public education. Second Life educators, SLED, doing the usual things, research, grad students looking at accessibility, Second Life for the blind, LMS to Second Life mashups. I guess that one's a natural. Cool tools, Second Life in healthcare, so on, so forth. It all sounds so familiar, doesn't it? Cave. No, not the cave, the virtual reality simulator that was created in Illinois that you could actually walk into and it projected up on the walls. No, this is the Center for Advanced Virtual Education, the clone on Second Life. And it's also derivative. Here's David Warlick. Now, he says, the ridiculousness does not escape me. I'm in my presentation pointing my audience to the online wiki handouts via a presentation slide. It points to a web URL that will link Second Life users to teleport to my office. There you can click the drawer for the current presentation, which links you back into your browser. The Discovery Educator Network. Of course, the Discovery Channel is a major U.S. brand involved in education. And of course, if you're a brand these days, you're on Second Life. There's me in my hand-me-down clothes, basic black. I was able to find one of those neat microphones, but you can't really see it there. And this was just, I was just getting ready for this talk, and I was wandering through Second Life. I've had this character for a while, but I don't go in there very much because I have 13 Linden dollars. But I'm wandering around and looking around in Second Life, and it struck me, I don't know how many of you are Star Trek fans, but have you ever seen that episode where they beam down? They always beam down, right? They beam down, and then they're in this alien civilization, and there's buildings, nothing else. They're just walking through this empty city. And then there are these things that come down out of the sky and eat them. But happily that was absent here. But it was that sort of experience. And that is the experience that I think most people have when they go to Second Life. And it has to leave them scratching their head. And of course, if you hit the little box there, the little map, and you look for the little dots that represent people, because you want to go see the people, right? Because it's all about the communication, right? So you find where all the people are, and then you teleport over to them, and of course you hit a casino. Clay Shirky, people talk about me as a skeptic. Clay Shirky is a professional skeptic. Questioning Second Life, the article is a story too good to check. And he questions, and I think quite reasonably, the reported popularity of Second Life. And he reports Second Life is largely a try-me virus. It may report millions of users, but really it can only support a few thousand at any given time. And in fact, it wasn't so long ago that once actual usage reached, I think the number was 38,000 people online, they started kicking people out. Of course, the people that they kicked out were the people that didn't pay. Now, a service, as Shirky writes, a service that appeals to a few thousand people on a billion-person internet is a rounding error. And so why is so much attention being paid to this? Well, Shirky's explanation, people don't remember the history of virtual reality. But this is conceptually simple. We can understand it. It's familiar to us. And of course, it's perfect for publishers, nothing personal, for publishers and the media. It's the content-driven story, right? The content is everything on Second Life. And the media, if you look at the media in Second Life, despite what people tell you about everybody building things, the media is largely push-driven. I look at Second Life, and after asking, where are the crowds, I ask, where are the bottom-up, user-driven initiatives? Where is open source in Second Life? Where is Wikipedia in Second Life? Why was CopyBot, something that allowed you to recreate any object, killed in Second Life? Yeah, people forget the history. Way back when, way back before Ought3, way back in the prehistory of the internet, there were two sides to cyberspace, and people don't realize this. There was the gamer side, and there was the text side. Academics are here. I came from the gamer side. Sometimes it shows. And so when people say Second Life is not a game, I hear myself saying, this mud, this is not a game. This is not a multi-user dungeon. It's a multi-user domain. And you know, go to Second Life and ask yourself, how is this not a game when the activities that people undertake are creating things and then showing them off? I mean, have they never played SimCity? I mean, there are different kinds of games. In Second Life, it is a game. You create the most beautiful house, the most beautiful costume. I saw when I was at the shelter the other day, somebody with a beautiful big black wings flying, or spectacular costume. And you know, when I play SimCity, you might not know this, in the original SimCity, if you hit the shift key and you type FUND, shift fund, you get $10,000. That's how I won at SimCity. And it seems to me in Second Life you can cheat too. You can buy Linden dollars instead of earning them in the casino. And you know, there is the crossover, right? And this is the very explicit crossover that people are making. The hero in the gaming environment, that's you, is the same as the student in the learning environment, that's also you, and the individual in the real environment. There is this crossover. Muds and moos and muses and deku's, we've seen this before. Now, this vocabulary, the interactivity, or it's a place to try out different identities. I sold that very line to people at Assiniboine Community College. They wouldn't let me set up a mug, but I still pushed it. Not a dungeon. The multi-academic user domain was set up in 1995, 1996, by myself, Jeff McLaughlin, Istvan Barkley, and Wes Cooper. And we had a conference for the Canadian Association of Distance Education in that environment. It looks a lot like this, except we didn't have pictures. And we had a lot of people. Terry Anderson came and presented in our conference. And so the history has gone forward, and you've already seen some of these, so I won't linger on it. I remember people just going gaga over the palace. Conrad loved the palace and thought the palace was easy. See the little avatar there, the little circle. Active Worlds. I spent a lot of time in Active Worlds. Active Worlds was so cool because you could have multiple users come online and build a virtual world and talk to each other. It's been around for about 10 years. More. Furcadia. That one was new to me. Probably just as well. EverQuest. World of Warcraft, which actually does have huge numbers of members. So what are we looking at? The Gartner article, this is the article that tells us 80% of the people who are active online will have second lives in 2011, gives us five laws of virtual reality. And I argue, subtly, that there's an exception to every one of these five laws. Virtual worlds are not games. Well, I've already responded to that. Virtual worlds very much are games. Say they're not, you say they're not games all you want, they're games. But you know, it's okay. It can be a game. It's all right. Talk to James Paul G. Talk to Mark Prensky. It's okay to be a game. Second law. Every avatar is a real person. I just killed myself when I read that. MUDs. People who have spent any time in MUDs have encountered what are called bots. What a bot is a type of, well, I won't say artificial intelligence because they're usually not very intelligent, but it's a fake human, a fake player. And I'm not talking about the NPCs, non-player characters, that wander around. Those are the things you go around and kill. I'm talking about things that actually log on as clients and pretend that they're humans. On IRCs, which is another one of these strange online phenomena, they're called chatterbots. And you log on, they have a conversation with you. Every avatar is a real person? Well, not necessarily. Every second avatar, maybe. And various avatars might be the same person, two or three people. Actually, I tried to create a second avatar for Second Life just in preparation for this. I wanted to have a conversation with myself, try out my talk. And it wouldn't let me. So maybe they're clamping down on that. Third law, be relevant and add value. I was thought of that one while I was sitting in the casino earning dollar number 11, dollar number 12. Fourth law contained the downside. I won't even get into the downside. And the fifth law, this is going to be the long haul. This is what your broker tells you just before the crash, right? No, hang on to those stocks. Now is not the time to sell. You're in this for the long haul. Let's look at the real issues of Second Life. And the real issues are, interestingly, the same issues that were brought up by a guy called David Noble. When David Noble came out in the late 1990s with digital diploma mills, he was universally reviled because he was describing a phenomenon that wasn't there. Right? The internet didn't create all of a sudden this big, you know, cash for degrees kind of industry. It didn't suddenly commercialize education. But now all of a sudden, well, maybe not all of a sudden, but now certainly in this context, his arguments become a lot more relevant. The sort of environment that's being created for education in Second Life is exactly the sort of education that David Noble was warning against. Let's put the issue right on the table. Who owns Second Life? Very squarely, it is not the people. It is not the residents of Second Life. It is Linden Labs. How do you know that? Because if you don't pay your rent, they'll take your island away. If you don't pay for an identity fee, they won't let you into certain sections. And if you don't subscribe, if it gets too busy, they'll just kick you off. So that's not personal rights to me. That's a private ownership of proprietary territory where they make up the rules. Privileged access, specially selected individuals. It's centralized. It's a single place. That's why they're having such issues. The open letter that came out the other day talking about the dropping of the Second Life grid, talking about the loss of property on Second Life, the inconsistencies of Second Life. These are problems that happen when you try to take something and put it all on one system, or even in one domain. Imagine if we built the internet that way. We hire a company. Let's call them, for the sake of argument, Linden Labs. And we'll have Linden Labs host every web page in the world, either directly or indirectly. How do you think that would have worked? We would not have the billion user internet, would we? Because they could not possibly handle a billion users. What about interoperability? People who remember MUDs remember something called InterMUD. What is InterMUD, you may ask? Well, there are many MUDs. In fact, there are thousands of MUDs out there. People loved MUDs. People on the tech side who were in Usenet and all of that, they never knew about this, but there was people loved MUDs. And they liked to chatter. We chatted a lot. We may have been killing monsters, very seriously killing monsters, but we chatted nonstop, and we liked to chat in between MUDs. And so what InterMUD was a way of creating communications from one MUD to another MUD. It was largely supported by what was called the Nightmare MUD Log, written by a guy called George Rees, a.k.a. Descartes. He was the Descartes of the MUD, right? InterMUD never went beyond simple communications. There's some very good reasons for that. You had, on the one hand, something like MediaMoo or LambdaMoo, nice, social, you know, everybody's happy. And then on the other end of the scale, you had things called Decoods. These were killer MUDs. Most people's experience of a deco, right, is brand new user, log on, somebody kills you. You had to be tough to play in a deco. And they were called PKs, right, player killers. Now, imagine interoperability between the nice civilized halls of MediaMoo and a deco. And some guy in a Deku takes all of his money and his plus 10 Excalibur sword, ports over to MediaMoo, and then starts killing all the scholars. So there's issues not just of culture, although those are big issues, but issues of transportability of goods. How would the transportability of goods work in an interoperable Second Life and, say, my website? Could I create something on my website and then bring it into Second Life and then sell it for Linden dollars? Okay, what's really happening? I've thought about it because it's a puzzle why something that... I don't have a slide for this, but here's the phrase that went through my head. And I'm trying to explain why we would not simply tolerate, but actually encourage or endorse something in this realm that on the web as a whole we would never tolerate for a minute. You know, private ownership. Even your names. You don't even get to have your names. And what I think is happening is this. That this, and that's a picture of that screen there online, looks almost identical to this, and you may recognize yourself. And you look at what's happening online, and you look at what's happening in this room, it's the same thing. And isn't that comfortable? Isn't that safe? Second Life, I argue, taps into what you might call a latent conservatism. A conservatism that serves the interests of people who are already doing well under the current system and helps people feel comfortable with the technology so that they don't have to do anything different. Somebody earlier said, Ian Davis said earlier, it's like Web 2.0. This is so not Web 2.0. Web 2.0 actually changes things. Web 2.0 empowers people. Obviously, I'm not plugged in. If somebody could plug in my computer, I'd really appreciate that. It is in a power bar. Anyhow, we'll let the power people take care of this. Speaking of not being empowered. Web 2.0 is about portability. Portability of content, portability of production. Web 2.0 is about open standards. Web 2.0 is about the consumer becoming the creator and replacing the traditional creator. Second Life is exactly not that. Second Life, despite what you are told, Second Life is where the traditional publishers and producers of content are the new publishers and producers of content. And if you don't believe me, go look at Second Life. And so I'm asking, where's the where there? Why are people doing this? Why are people so enamored of Second Life? Is it the streaming of videos? Is it being able to stand up in front of a class? Is it the avatars? Being able to rehearse? Is it because it's cross-platform? I did get a bit of a chuckle over that. Openness and neutrality, manifest involvement with education, are all of these things somehow unique to Second Life? Is that what makes Second Life special? Is that what accounts for all the publicity and the push that Second Life has been getting? I mean, clearly not, right? I mean, clearly we've been able to do these things before with other technologies. Is it enhanced visualization, rapid development potential, international communication? He says as he uses Skype. Sense of presence. Something went thud. This is the first time I've had a computer go thud on me. This is the first presentation I've ever done with this Mac. So I've learned all kinds of things. I've learned not to use TIFF images in my PowerPoint presentations. I've learned that the plugins are funny. What else have I... Never mind. None of these things are unique to Second Life. And indeed, Second Life isn't even particularly good at some of them. People talk about, oh yeah, we can communicate and have a conversation in Second Life. Have you gone into a room and tried to have a conversation with a couple hundred people in Second Life? It's just, it's not on. Compare Second Life with some things that are genuinely popular. Things like instant messaging, where you really can have international communications very quickly and efficiently. Compare it with MySpace, where people really can put their own content online. Compare it to YouTube, same thing, where people can put their video content online. To Skype, communication, video communication. I don't need to simulate it. I can show you. And the Wii. The Wii is a real advance. I always feel funny saying that. Great product. Name? Guys. And even Joanna Scott from Nature says, we would never consider placing our articles in Second Life. It's just pointless. How much of what is being done in Second Life is pointless? How much of it is being done just because it's Second Life, just because it's following the crowd? What is the real point of Second Life? Under Skull writes, when he compares Second Life with all these other alternatives that I've mentioned throughout this talk, the thing with Second Life is the real money flows in and out of Second Life. Second Life has an economy that interacts with the real economy. Second Life is commercial. And in that sense, users can create unique content, hence the killing of CopyBot, right? And retain ownership of it. And then this world stays persisting. It doesn't reboot the way Mudge used to or the way some games do. It stays persistent. People can change it. They can establish something like ownership under the benevolent guidance, of course, of Linden Labs. Now that is what makes Second Life different, isn't it? That, rather than via virtual reality or communication or classrooms or any of these things, that is what's making Second Life unique. That is why it's getting all the press. That is why when Jim Prubrick from Linden Labs gets up here and talks, he talks about the economy of Second Life. Oh, is this what we've been waiting for in online learning? Is this the breakthrough that we were looking for? Commercial transactions? Oh, maybe if you're a publisher. How about private ownership? Is that what was missing in online learning? about silos and walled gardens. Each institution, an island unto itself, competing in a brand war, never the twain to meet. Is it branding? Is that what we needed to make online learning a success? You talk to companies and organizations that are involved in Second Life, it's one of the first things they talk about. Oh yeah, it was a great brand hit for us. Proprietary technology, maybe that's what we wanted. Or perhaps what we really needed was some way to charge people in order to have an identity online. I submit that the future for virtual reality, and there should be a future for virtual reality, should be exactly what Second Life isn't. It should be distributed so that we all own it, not just one company. The hardware, the software, should be spread around the world and not centered at Linden Labs. It should be open source, not just the client, but the server. People should be able to make their own VR their own way. They should be able to share this technology and collaborate among themselves to make it better. It should not be proprietary. Copyright, patent, punish the offenders. It should be non-commercial, at least for public education. Or at least a non-commercial alternative so that we're not forced to go one way. And the management, the governance, should be diverse and democratic and not subject to the arbitrary fiat coming from Linden Lab management or any other management for that matter. The virtual world should be a lot more like the web, where we create our own world, where we visit from place to place either anonymously or as an avatar, with our own identity that we create, that we keep, that we hold, that is our right. And where we can, as a society, as a community, create a learning commons. Now that's the future of virtual reality, and that's not the future that we're going to get by 2011. But it is the future, maybe in part, that we'll get one day, if you will, post Second Life. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. We asked Stephen here to be provocative, and I think he's done that very well. Before we go into the panel session, I'm just going to open the floor just to one or two questions, because I'm sure that will have set your minds thinking. Okay, so the question from Second Life is, how can Second Life be a game when at this conference alone I've made academic contacts and recruited participants for research? I've done all this on my wireless laptop at home, laying in bed. CMI. Surely the platform is defined by usage.
That's kind of a funny question. As anyone who knows my history would know, that I made all of my contacts, got my start in this business, learned how to write software, learned a lot about education in a place called Mud Dog Mud, virtual reality at its best, which was manifestly a game. And I know that because I had to kill a whole lot of orcs. But being a game is not contrary to making contacts. Being a game is not contrary to having a community or society. I mean, people talk not just in metaphor about the game of life. You know, just because it's a game doesn't mean it can't be these other things. And just because it's these other things doesn't mean it can't be a game. And if you don't recognize the game-like properties of Second Life, then I submit that you're not looking at everything that Second Life is.
Okay, what I suggest we do is go into the panel session. So what I'd like to do is ask all the speakers from the day to come up and take a seat at the front. Just take 2 seconds to get this together.